What's the deal, my people? You know it is a Don Tony Teflon, Phil the Issues guy, Escaping From podcast. This is going to be the deep dive edition of this. We're going to go as deep as we can into every episode. Now that we have seen two seasons, now we could probably pick out other things that maybe we might have missed and start trying to figure out exactly what's going on here. Phil, what's going on with you, bro?
Not too much. Very excited. It was really awesome to go back and watch this first episode. And it's always good in shows like this to go back and see if you can kind of predict where things are going to go from the beginning part of the episode. We're going to go swimming. We're swimming with the deep. We're going to go deep in every one of these episodes tonight. We're talking about the season premiere, A Long Day's Journey Into Night. And I remember, we'll get into it obviously and break down this whole episode, Tony, but I forgot how good of a pilot or a first episode this was that just really grabs you right away and tells you so much in this first episode.
And when you deal with the first episode of a show, as someone who's watched a lot of TV like yourself, what do you think, what are they trying to do with a first episode?
Okay, in the first episode, you have to establish all the dynamics in town, what's going on in town, and set the scene of the dynamic in the tone of the entire show. And I think what this pilot does exceptionally well is that they show effortlessly in that beginning segment, even with the music that comes in, the "we gotta get out of this place," it tells you everything you need to do. And then in the same episode, they have the Matthews show up, which gets to tell you everything you need to know about people arriving in the town. And you get to see drunk idiot passing out again. I forgot about that guy passing out, his whole family dying, and Boyd shoving his face in it like he's a bad dog. So you get to see Boyd and deal with the emotional weight of what Boyd and his family has done with. Everything that we see with the conflict between Colony House and the town gets set up really kind of subtle but good, where Boyd shows up and Donna's like, "You're not allowed to be here." It's just a small line there. Or a small line about Tabitha and or about the Matthews lost child. That's not the kid you're talking about. They fit all that in. So, Tony, I think it's creating mystery, but really kind of putting you in that place. And I think this episode does that better than a lot of first episodes do.
Yeah. So when I think about first pilot episodes, I think that what you're trying to establish here is, number one, you're trying to, obviously you want people to come back and watch the second episode. So you want to leave on a cliffhanger, right? That's usually where a good first episode ends. You want to leave on something that makes people want to continue watching. Great but you point. Want to establish the main characters and the situation that they're in. That's what any show will try to do. You establish all the main characters, their personalities, everything about them, and then the situation. And then that, let's go into our first beginning opening audio, and I'll discuss a little more. One second.
Oh, no. And as Tony's setting that up, the opening is we hear the bell. It's the end of the first day. Another thing, Tony, I forgot that Sarah got this creepy this early. Sarah gets really creepy in this episode right from the beginning. And in my memory, it like led into Sarah being creep. But no, she's creepy right off the bat in this episode. And
I just had this whole thing playing and now all of a sudden it's not.
And Jade is setting it up. As Tony's figuring it out, let's take our first super chat of the night. We got from Cats. Great to see Cats in the live chat, my favorite animal. This is just a friendly reminder that Jade is the best. And this might be the best version of Jade in this episode, where we get all, I was going to say tripping, but he's definitely rolling. Rolling Jade, that is just out of control. Like, "I love you. You guys in the live chat are like all so pretty. You're all so pretty." But Cats, thank you so much for that super chat. Great to see Jack in the chat. John Haymaker. We got Yates in the live chat. We got T. We got Allison. We got all of our Shemp Hemp with us tonight. Cool gamer.
I had it. All right, I'm going to have to open up a brand new file and do it all over again, which is stupid. Because
Exactly. What's the use of prepping if it's just not going to work?
And that's the whole thing. I had the whole thing there. This makes no sense that it doesn't want to work.
Just to go behind the looking glass here for a second, is I came in, I was late. I was late and I came in and Tony was working hard putting this stuff together. And he's like, stop the chit chat. I'm doing some work. And he was getting his stuff done before the show. So I just want to make that clear. We got Meg Smith in the live chat. Season 3 has not been confirmed, but I'm willing. Oh yeah, season 3 has been confirmed in my mind. Yes, they're working on it right now. I was thinking season 4 in my mind when you said that, but season 3 is absolutely happening. They're probably back to working on it right now. The strikes did put a hamper on things, but I do think the production is going to be set, and you'll see a short delay, but the show will be back for 100%. Season 3 is coming.
Yeah, they're working on the show now.
So. Yep. Hey, we got Carla Wayne Way from Australia listening around while driving. We got Jazz Boo. Well, while Tony's setting us up, this first scene that we're going to be listening to, it starts with we see Boyd walking with the bell ringing. It's a great visual. And the way the whole world opens up, it's almost like the start of a video game with our main character walking in, ringing the bell, walking through basically the first person after Boyd that we see is Sarah. And she plays the jukebox, which plays the animals. We got to get out of this place. And we see how in charge Boyd is as we get the lay of the land as he rings the bell. It's just a great way to start the series. And my question here, and we'll get into this more when we listen to it back, is
no, I can't hear it on my thing that's playing, but it's like I can't hear it at all for some reason. I gotta figure out what's going on with my speakers here.
No worries, we'll figure this out. I still think of Boyd as Augustus Hill from Oz. I usually kind of focus on that one as well with him. And my question here at the beginning, as we see it start out with him walking and ringing the bell, my immediate thought, thinking back to where we are in the series, is that it's going to end with a similar shot. The end of this series will also end somehow with Boyd walking, ringing the bell one last time of some sort. But
let's see. Maybe it's something to do with StreamYard.
Michael from Lost. Yep. He was also Pope in Sons of Anarchy. Mercutio in the Romeo and Juliet, the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet is the first time I remember seeing him. The Romeo and Juliet is the first time I remember seeing him. And that was kind of his big breakout role for me, and then Oz. I mean, those two roles were the first big bangs, but he's been in so many things. It's great to, but this is the first one. He's really the main focus and the main player in it. And it's good to have him be the main player. Tony's figuring out some technical difficulties. He'll be back in 1 second. You're stuck with me and Lotus right here, but let's take some of your questions. Let's get back in. Let's get diving into this from stuff. He was in the woods. He's the best man. Tony is the Whisperers from Lost. I can't remember how I was introduced to the From series. Easy for me. I was introduced by Tony. It was the first I heard of it. And I was a Lost fan, so excited that members of the creative team are trying a different project. Some of the creative team. And maybe learning from some of the mistakes that were made in that series. So that's my biggest thing going into this whole episode. And I do think what's interesting about this first episode, we don't see, part of it is not seeing the incident starting or the first time, or even following our main character being introduced to this world. We follow our main character, Boyd, who's in full control of the situation and walking through. And then we kind of get into it with the Matthews family, which are in some ways a partial leads to the show. There's, you know, it's a well featured cast, especially as you get into season 2. But you know, it is Harold's show, and Harold is in this world. We come in on a day in the life kind of thing, which I think creates an interesting atmosphere right from the beginning too. Like I think it says 96 days since an incident. And all that stuff helps make you feel like you're breathed into this world. Let's go. Michael from Lost. My favorite bad joke is that the series ends with Walt showing up in a boat going, "Dad, let's get out of here." Same. Tony turned me on to this show. His enthusiasm hooked it. Always know if Tony likes it, I'll like it as I like Harold, and I like Harold as well. That's how I've gotten onto a lot of shows that I've enjoyed in recent years. Mare of Easttown was another one that I would never have heard of if it wasn't for Tony bringing it up. T says, "Boy's walk in the beginning symbolizes order and protection in dark circumstances." Excellent way of putting that. And again, I've said this a few times, I like how they don't have to tell us anything. We see it all with the way he's walking, the way he's taking care of everybody, and even to the point of, unfortunately, the mother and the child passing, and we'll get to that part in a little bit. Even that kind of sets us up in an awful way. It makes us feel his control over the town, that if he doesn't have his hand on everything, we're in for a problem. You can feel the anxiety. I think that's one of those things that doesn't often get spoken about this show. I think, and you see it in the way he treats other people and reacts to other people sometimes, and how quick he is to sort of get on them angrily. It's that Harold or Boyd is playing this very much about the stresses of this town, and obviously everything he went through with his family. All those stresses are annoying him. It's getting to him, and he's playing it so well. That's a minor little touch he's putting into this role that's very genuine and real. The annoyance all of this would be too. Yes, you'd be frustrated. Yes, you'd be horrified. Yes, you'd be scared. You'd be whatever. But you'd also just be annoyed, especially if you're the one that has to keep everyone's hands out of the damn cookie jars. Hey, she does the most. Yeah, most channels only cover the most popular shows, so it's definitely good being introduced to niche shows. I absolutely agree with that. And what's unfortunate is once the shows become popular, the big channels take it and squash us indie channels like bugs. But that's why it's good to get in. You have to try to get in there early. It's like, you know, putting money on roulette spins. I have not watched that yet, Brooke, but I will try to take a look at it. I don't currently have MGM Plus, but next time I do subscribe, I will catch up. I do the app bouncing, where if a show's on that I'm wanting to watch, then I get that app and I watch it for a while, and then I'll delete it and go get it again. If you're a fan of Harold and you haven't seen the Romeo and Juliet with the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet, or if you're a fan of Baz Luhrmann's material and you didn't know he did that, which Moulin Rouge, the most recent Elvis movie, was that anything dance? I'm not going to sit here and try to remember the titles of his movies. But A Plague on Both Your Houses, John Haymaker. John Leguizamo and Harold Perrineau are the two standout performances in that role. They kill every scene that they're in, and it's almost worth just looking them up on YouTube or other places like that, just to see their monologues and their moments as Tybalt. I think Leguizamo plays, and Mercutio on with Harold, and he always just delivers such amazing performances. So starting the episode off right with him, bang, 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 is just an exceptionally awesome way to start the season. Let's see. It's crazy how the first season is so much better and they need to get back to the fear element. CJ, I was going to talk about that a little bit more when Tony gets back, but I think that's so true. Whatever you think, this isn't a season one versus season two. We're doing a full deep dive. We're going to get to season two stuff as well here eventually. But we're looking at back in retrospect of having now watched both seasons and looking back on season one. That was why this was a great idea by Tony to do this. Now, looking back right from the beginning in that first episode, even the cliffhanger thing that we stop on is horrifying. It's scary. That grandmother, the minute she starts talking at the door, it's almost as horrifying as the grandmother in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. If you don't know what I'm talking about, don't look it up. It's horrifying. Come and give grandma a kiss. Ah! I'm tortured for life. That's right. Dun, 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 dun. I've got HBO Max for $2.99. Oh, yeah. I was pissing myself off that I already signed up for stuff when I saw some of those deals on the holidays. Hello, Allison. You're definitely not an indie channel. You have one of the most insightful. Oh, thank you so much, Allison. Tony and I appreciate that more than you know. And the only thing I can tell you is keep spreading that word so someone hires us. We love doing this. We'll always talk on both of our channels, but you know, Tony and I are for hire, you for all your podcasting needs. Okay, so here we go. And we'll happily work. We'll work less than most people just to quit our normal jobs and be able to podcast for a living. So hire Tony and I today.
Yes, please do.
Tony's like, what are you talking? Oh yes, hire us. I was calling us an indie channel, and someone said, "You guys give the best thought provoking bubble." And I said, "Then tell somebody that to hire us. We'll work."
I would love to. You know, that would be amazing if we did. All right, I'm sorry about that, but you know,
sorry for the brief issues program in the middle of
town. I had my fuse went out. I had to flip the fuse and stuff and everything else, and I had to find it. Fuse has never gone out in here ever since I've been here, so I had to flip the fuse and find it. But I'm here.
Hopefully, I didn't scare too many people away, Tony. With the
I'm sure you did a great job. All right,
don't watch back.
All right, let's see if this works then.
I need to hippie activity after that. T, I think that's part of it. You're not sure who you can trust besides Boyd. And what haunting way to start everything back up, Tony, with the ringing of the bell as he walks in. And he just creates so much fear. And someone was saying this while you were gone about coming back and watching season one again. I can think you can see it right from this first episode. They got to get back to scary in season three. Season one is so much more frightening than season two is, and they need to get back to that.
Yeah, I think that I agree with that point too. But I think that when you look at this point again, this it opens up. Oh my God! Now it's going to do that. I have to do it from here. This is going to work. It opens up. We hear the bell, right? So the first character that we're introduced to is Boyd. But the second character they show us is Sarah.
Sarah, yep. Sarah's I said that too in my notes. Second is Sarah. And she's the one that plays the jukebox too. We got to get out of this place.
And then when Sarah does this, we see her lock the door and we see her grab the talisman. Right? So I think it's real significant. It means something big that when you're looking at a pilot, so to say, you're trying to establish central characters. So the first character they show was Boyd. Obviously, Boyd's on the poster. You would think that they would show him. But the second character is Sarah, which means that Sarah is a major player. They want you to know who this woman is, right? She's at the diner, and she tells everyone to go home, and then she touches the talisman. She's the first one. When we see the talisman, we see it with Sarah. That's the first time we ever notice a talisman. It's with Sarah. It's not with Boyd. It's not with any other character. They show it with Sarah. And this is very important that they do this for a reason. Next time, in this diner scene, I'm not going to play it because I don't want to get copyright strike, but it's the music that comes on automatically. We have to get out of this place, right? Now, people may say, when you watch it the first time, you're just thinking like maybe someone hit the button and that's why it played. But obviously, there are creatures in here that are playing this music, and we have to get out of this place. You may think now we look back, oh, they were talking about the people stuck in town. They need to get out of that place. But that's not the case. That we have to get out of this place is not for the people in town. It's for the people being held captive.
Yeah, that they're sending messages.
By the other entity. And they're sending the messages through the jukebox. That's the only way they can send it.
And I think it's also interesting that we meet up with Sarah and see her firsthand because of her eventual situation by the end of this episode and killing somebody, because we also see it's she just becomes so centrally important to the story moving forward. And I do think that's exceptionally important that she's the first one. And then I believe the next people we see is Kenny losing at chess, which I think is, and we'll get to that in a second after we're done with this opening scene of Boyd walking around. But I also think that nothing that happens here is of doubt. Kenny's Charlie Brownness that we joke around a lot here, and the Kenny's not getting any ass kind of jokes, but the other part of it is Kenny has a little bit of a Charlie Brown thing to him. Everything that could go wrong goes wrong with Kenny, and we're setting up all these dynamics of these characters. And great point though, Tony, about the music, because even me watching it on this time, I'm like, oh, did Sarah just push the button for it to go on? A couple things took a moment to remember what's going on in the series, and who knows who's sending those messages in the codes. And it's an interesting song choice of get us out of here, get us out of here. You know,
and it's telling you that it's not just one of them. It's multiple of them that are trapped there, that they need to get out of this place, that they're stuck in there and they're being held prisoner there. And that is what the opening scene, we'll go play a little more, and then we'll go into the next scene, and then we'll talk a little more about it.
Free! The fuck up! Come on, Frank. Gotta get home. It's getting dark out. Frank!
Frank. Frank. It's just as much on this bartender. As much as Frank gets his shit, it's his fault for his family, all that kind of stuff. The bartender knows that Frank's F up and has a family at home. The bartender could say, Frank, you stay here and go watch the family for the night. The bartender might not be a mole, but he's so apathetic. He's such a,
I think Frank's heavy motherfucker, so he didn't want to pick his big ass up.
Leave Frank and you go and watch the family. You go walk to the family house, spend the night at the family house, make the wife make you dinner or whatever. Like hang out there.
It's not the family. It's not Frank's. It's not because Frank isn't there that what happens to their family.
I mean, that's what Boyd sort of.
Yeah, that's what he
attacks him on.
Well, we'll definitely talk about that in a second. Let's keep going through the scene.
When Boyd bad dogs him. You're a bad dog. Your family got killed, bad dog. And he rubs his nose in the blood. I hear you. I guess I just want to make this bartender dirty somehow, Tony.
Sometimes your dad, he just gets a little forgetful. That's all.
He's a drunk.
Stay in your prayers.
Your dad's a drunk.
God damn it, Frank.
I have a question, Tony.
Yep.
Are we to... Okay, you know Ghostbusters 2?
Yes.
When Ray is staring at Viggo and he becomes part of Viggo, you know, Viggo like can control you and he's looking in your eyes. Do these monsters have that ability, or is this kid just stupid?
Well, we can talk more about the kid when the actual scene happens. I mean, we're about to play it, so let's listen. And then we'll see.
It's just a thought. I'm sorry. It's horrible, but it's just a thought. These aren't real people. They're characters. I'm just reminding people of that. Thank you, cats. Oh, yeah, she's fine.
All right, so we had a kid talk, the knock on the window. First, let's go through that. How did the grandma monster get up to the top? Did she fly? Well, if I had the picture, I don't have the pictures. Next week, I'll have pictures and I'll have the audio. I'll have it all set up for you so we can really get into it. There is a a balcony, a porch that she could stand on top of. So she must have climbed up. And now the question would be, how did the mother, if she was downstairs, not hear this monster climb up on the roof? You would think that she would hear that or something like that, right? So she didn't fly. She climbed up there. Next, we hear she
got
knows,
on another monster's shoulders.
But she knows that that little girl is in that room.
She like, has she been coming there often, like with porn stash? Like,
yeah, well, how long was she scouting this and trying to do this here, right?
Exactly.
So she knows that girl is in that room at that time. She knocks on the window, and the little girl says, "I'm not supposed to," but she's like, it'll be our secret. It is definitely a porn stash situation and everything that's going on here with it. It seems that the child is being manipulated. Now, as for the child being stupid, I don't think the cat is a kid, so I can't say the kid is stupid. Okay, I would have hit the kid with a brick in the face.
But that's what I'm saying. If you walk in and your fictitious character kid, not one of your own kids, your fictitious character
kid, and I'm gonna get eaten. I'm gonna hit that kid with a shoe with something to stop the snapper out of it. I'm not just gonna stand there. But let's listen. I give the blame more on the mother.
I mean, the mother does give a couple warnings. Let's listen here. She's like, stop. Yeah, that little girl just wanted to see Nana, and she didn't care which Nana it was.
Please, just
okay, sure. Okay, Tony, I'm with you. You won me over because the mother had three goes at it. Three goes around the merry-go-round, and she only got intense on the third one. You bet your ass on that first one, it wouldn't be like, calm down. I'm not talking to somebody about to jump off a ledge. I have to scream to my kid, do not touch that goddamn window right now.
You hit her with a brick. What the fuck are you doing, motherfucker? Whatever it takes, you charge at the kid. You don't just stand back there and watch. You charge at the
kid. And tackle. You do your best tackle fumble drill, and you tackle her.
Yes, and you get and you call it a day.
Yep, I'm with you.
It does seem like there is some type of with the porn stash, I mean, we're not in the episode, but when we get there, we'll talk a little. There was no hypnotizing going on. That was this rock hard dick.
But to your point right there, for Tony, I think what's going to be cool about talking about it in this run through and breaking it down, we are going to be talking all spoilers for future events if it has anything to attribute to this. So the only other time that we saw a situation similar to this is the porn stash situation. And in that, like you said, we know that it was a long con and that she'd been doing it for a while and there was no mind control other than turning his horny little ass on. I mean, other than that, there was nothing else going on there. So to your eyes here, this seems like she's been to see this little girl before. This wasn't just the first time.
No, yeah, I think she's been there before. She's worked on her. And parents may not know she's worked on her, but she has worked on this girl for a little bit. You know what I mean? And it seems like that's what, again, if you want to call in and talk about what we're talking about right now, 781-990-8509, you can call in live right now. We'll take your calls about the scene. If you want to talk about the scene that we're talking about, just give the call in. It's a much better show when y'all call in. So make sure you definitely call in and everything else. Right after this scene is when the credits roll. So this is the opening of the show. And what they're trying to establish, what's going on inside this town and everything else. We don't know at this time that these people are trapped in this town. We know, we just think that this is just what it is, right? Which is there in the world. We don't know anything else about this right now, of them being trapped or anything like that. We learn all that later. So right now, this is just what it is. Just Genius, it says this, maybe it's not full of mind control, but some kind of trigger for emotion. Trigger. I just think that she's a little girl. It's easy to manipulate, especially when you say the right things. Oh, you want to keep a secret? You want to keep a secret? Little girls, you want to keep secrets. You want to say things like that. You know what I mean?
Tony, did you ever watch the show Mad Men? There's a scene in that where someone breaks into Don Draper's house, and Sally knows so little about her dad, and the person that breaks in is such a good con person that they convince her that she's related to the dad just by saying, "Oh, your dad? Oh, your mom is such a piece of work." You're in this. Some people are just really good at saying the right thing in the right situation to make you feel like they know you. It happens with salespeople all the time in more of a legal sense, but manipulating bad people can do it in a really effed up way, and like Nana did in this situation.
And I think that what happened is they know the right monster to send. It wouldn't have been the same effect if it was the milkman monster or the wedding monster.
Or
grandma monster for a reason, right? For a reason. And they must know what's going on with their grandmother, that she missed her grandmother, that she knows about her grandma, or she was closer to grandma. They must know that somehow to send the grandma monster there to get this specific child. Tim wants to know, do the monsters have to be invited? It seems so.
Or
she didn't just break through that window when she could. She had to open that one. I don't think invited means here's an invitation, come in. You just got to open the fucking window once the seal is broke.
Right. That's the thing, to your point. It's not like a vampire. You have to say, hey, you're allowed to come into my house. But I think if you have a talisman up for protection, you need to break the seal of the talisman for them to be able to come in. Again, we see it similar in the porn stash situation where they have talismans protecting Colony House. But when porn stash opens a window, they can all... The talismans
keep coming.
Yeah, they mean deck at that point.
All right, let's go to the next scene.
Is it this time?
Yep, our next scene is introduced to Kenny's dad and Christy.
Oh, I didn't take every scene. This is the most important ones, I think. I would have took every.
Okay, so this is just after... After Boyd died, or after the kids died, when Boyd is treating him like a dog. Basically, he grabs him. I joked about this a couple of times. He literally grabs him like my grandmother used to abuse train my dog, like the old way where you grab a dog and you stick its face in poop and then you bring it outside. It's a way not to train your dog, but that's what Boyd does with this guy. Like, see, look at your dead wife and kid.
You can't? Huh? Fucking look at her. Look at her.
Bad dog.
Now, when we look at this, let's take this whole scene in account. Obviously, Boyd is very upset about what happened. Goes a little overboard here, though.
Because of his wife and how he feels about that, right? I mean, it's essentially, we know later, Tony, is that he wouldn't have freaked out like this if he didn't lose his own wife. And it comes out when he says the line, what's the line? A man needs to protect his family no matter what.
Yeah, and listen, he blames Frank for not nailing the window shut. And that's what he blames him for. Not that he actually spent the night at the bar, but that he didn't nail the window shut. He said, if you're going to have kids, you have to nail so kids don't open the window. And that's what he said. But it doesn't put a good look, like when you're looking at this guy, boy, from the ringing the bell and he's saying hi to everyone. All of a sudden, the next time you see him, he's smacking somebody in the face, dragging them upstairs, and then pulling the gun on him. You don't want to look. I'm going to shoot you in the head if you don't look, type situation.
Tony, this was one of the things I was talking about when you were figuring out the technical difficulties. I think part of the performance that Harold puts on that doesn't get talked about is how well he plays the anxiety and stress that he must be under, not only just losing his wife, but having a bunch of nitwits in this town. You got a bunch of stoners hanging up there in Colony House. You got a bunch of people that are constantly coming in where you have to sort of, I mean, they're capable people, don't get me wrong, but it seems like we set up a lot in this first episode and even in this first scene that if it wasn't for Boyd, these people are hiding in bushes and stuff. He organized them. He is the one that has the central figure that has made them, at least in this cycle. If this has been many cycles, maybe he's the Neo that's bringing it all together of this kind of situation. And I think one thing he plays really well right from the beginning of this episode, you see how annoyed he is with all of this and how pissed off he is at stupid that no one's helping him out. And with this guy, his frustration about not doing that thing, because what he's really thinking is, what I wanted to do was stop in every house and make sure every window was nailed myself. And this idiot couldn't have done it and taken one thing off my plate. We never hear that, but I bet that's what he's blaming himself within this, because that's what Boyd does. He takes all the blame onto himself.
And I think that when you deal with him as the sheriff, and you brought up his wife and everything else, it's the stress that his son don't speak to him. He knows that. You know what I mean? Great and point, everything dude. Else. There's a lot of stress dealing with that great whole point. Situation. And they had a very long streak going without an incident. And they had seen days. Like they figured it out, how to protect themselves and how everything was. They had the plan. Everything's working. You have all these days. Everything is good. And he's blaming him for falling asleep in the bar, but in all actuality, even if he was home, it still would have happened. If that Grandma Munster, even if he came to the house, unless he's sleeping with the daughter, like they're all having a family sleepover in the bed or something like that, then the Grandma Munster was coming in there and doing the same thing and the daughter would have opened the window.
So you think Boyd, and I agree with you, you think Boyd was being excessive here, like it didn't matter. Yeah. He was blaming him and throwing him the cell.
100% over he was being excessive, over aggressive, and a poor leader at this time. You know, when you lead a situation, he's trying to lead by fear, right? It seems like he's trying to make an example out of him in front of everyone, and more of a fearful thing to make people afraid of him. And that's not what you want. You don't want people. I mean, listen, I mean, you could say, you know, that the God, you know, Bronx said, would you rather be feared or would you rather be respected? Right? You can have those two different.
You can have both at the same time. Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I think he handled it wrong.
Yeah, Don Corleone. And I think that's an excellent point about the bad leadership thing there in that moment, because to your point as well, with just embarrassing him in front of people, using anger and negative reinforcement instead of positive reinforcement, to my metaphor or description about a dog thing, that's why I say my grandmother, the way my grandmother trained a dog, you need to train a dog with positive reinforcement, not negative. I do want to say one thing before we move on, a couple quick scenes that happened in between that. We had Kenny losing at chess and Chrissy. We learn their dynamic right away. We also learn that Kenny's dad is ill, but still kicking Kenny's ass at chess. We get some Kenny's family backstory, as Tony mentioned, 96 days since the incident. And then we get all of that stuff and the monsters killed everybody. Oh, and then as we eventually, and I think the next scene we'll probably get into as we get our intro and we meet our Matthews family coming up in a second here.
We do. I think the number thing we can't gloss over is what still happens inside this house. So obviously if I had the pictures, it would be a lot better. I would have had the picture and stuff, because it's a soundless, there's nothing you could see. But Boyd travels down the steps, and when he does, he sees a talisman on the floor.
Yep.
And that's when he picks the talisman off the floor and sticks it in his pocket. This is the same talisman that he has to hold in the RV later. But I think the important thing is that who put the talisman on the floor? It had to be the Grandma Munster. She had to physically grab the talisman and throw it on the floor. She didn't take it with her. She left it there, but she threw it on the floor. So you can't say that touching it don't hurt them. They can physically touch it. There's no one else who could have knocked that talisman on the floor. Now, if you want to say that she took off a hairpiece and wrapped it around a hand and then
threw potatoed it
and did something like that. I mean, you can say it. We don't know. I didn't see it like that. But what the point is that the monster knew what the talisman was enough to throw the talisman on the floor. But you would think, hey, maybe take it and get rid of it.
I was just about to ask you the question after I got off over the visual of her using a hot oven mitt to move it. She goes to the kitchen and gets the oven mitts and Nana's juggling it down the steps. But why do you think she didn't take it? Do you think it's just against the game? Like they're not allowed to not take it?
I think it's a fuck you and your talisman type situation. You know, situation like yeah, I'm in your house even with your talisman. What the fuck are you going to do? But it does establish rules to these monsters. There's rules like that.
That's what I'm saying. Is it just against the game? Like
it's the second time we see the talisman, third time we see the talisman, I think at this point, one time with Chrissy and then we see them again. And it's third time we see it right there to let you know that it does seem like it's a good possibility that this could be a game. Yeah. And there's rules to this that go on. Again, if you want to call in 781-990-8509. Don't be afraid.
There's rules to the game, as Omar would say. And I am taking a break from my annual Wire rewatch right now to do this podcast. That's how important and how much I love talking to Tony. I'm having my usual season two interaction where I'm bored at the first half and then I'm like, oh my god, season two is awesome. Like halfway through season two, you have that. The first half, you're like, oh god, let's get back to the Strigger and Bell and all that. And then halfway through, you're like, I love Frank Sabaka. This is awesome.
Yeah, okay, here we go. Let's keep
going. Sorry for the Wire side. Fuck your talisman. Which scene is this? Oh, okay, it's the Matthews family driving around as we see them eventually.
I think that's an important thing she said right there.
Selective.
You see them right there. They're driving around, and Tabitha brings up, why is the tree in the middle of the road? And Jim's logical explanation is, oh, maybe it got knocked down in the storm. Well, that's a pretty selective storm, meaning there's no other trees, fragments, or anything else in that road. And they want to point that out to you, that this is what's going on there. And then as this scene progresses is when we get the murder of crows that is above.
Or maybe an unkindness of ravens, as Tabitha says. But do you think... One thing I want to mention about the ravens or the crows is they didn't show up until...
It's crows because when you put on the subtext,
it says
crows.
Okay, so the crows didn't show up until Ethan climbed up on top of the tree. So is it a deterrent? Is it something? Is it someone switching a thing on a control board to turn on the ravens? And then the storm seems to come back too, which is something I missed in the past. The crows come in and the dark cloud comes in a little bit too to make it seem like it's about to storm again. It's very interesting what happens there in that moment. And we don't go back to that area till the end of the season when Sarah and Boyd go out there. Like that direction leads out to the lighthouse, correct?
Yeah. And again, so when you deal with, you know, the murder of crows is a term that was dubbed due to the battlefield of crows who would go and eat the dead bodies after a battle. And then that's where the term murder of crows would come from, because obviously they would eat all the basic
murder disgusting.
Right. So I think that does come into play. Let's listen to a little more.
Julie's a little snot in this episode too, the poor little Ethan all over the place. I do want to point out to something in the scene before this one. Julie is putting on a finger puppet show for Ethan and she teaches him about death. And it says, sometimes they don't come back. And also we get a line in that, monsters killed Norman. Good thing there's no such thing as monsters.
Yeah.
This was just scary.
Can we just leave, please?
And that is that scene. Again, we'll talk a little bit about the Matthews right now. Oh, we don't know about, we see them driving there when they're driving again. You know, the finger puppets do have credence to this situation, you know, because when she does the death of the killer, and then she says, you know, as you said, she says, well, it's a good thing because there's no such thing as monsters. It's going to show us, and I think, and I'm being honest here, that they give it away. In the first episode, they always tell you the full story of the whole show.
Or show you how it's going to end eventually at some point.
You always get it. And yeah, the I fact agree. That she, you can listen to what they're saying and read in between, you can hear how it is. She's telling you there's no such thing of monsters. Now, they want you to go, well, where we're at, monsters are real. No. There are no such things as, they're not monsters. There's something else going on with these creatures. They may appear to be monsters, but they're truly not monsters. And going back to the death scene of this little girl and the mother, what we didn't touch on was how the death was poured out. We could see at this death scene that the rib cage is ripped open, but there are no organs inside of the body. The organs are gone at the body. All you see is the flesh ripped open, and it looks nasty because the rib cage is open, you know, in the reverse Blood Eagle style.
Yep.
But all the organs are gone inside the body, which is very interesting when we see the actual autopsy
of Smiley later. Yeah, it is.
And you see that his organs are all petrified. Like it's all made out of stone.
And it also seems like the body was left as a message. I've done to go back to the wire, but like Brandon was left for Omar to find. It's just like left as a message for them to be like, look what we can do for a second, 96 days, the F you in your 96 days. And also with the Matthews, I want to point out that more of what this episode does so well from just an acting and storytelling standpoint. They never actually say it, but if you listen closely, you can tell that the Matthews are going through problems, are going to have a divorce. A couple of moments of dialogue between the two of them where he's just like, I keep wanting to get things back the way they used to be. Let's not talk about this right now, blah, blah, blah. There's just a back and forth between the two of them that you can see it. Again, Julie is not taking anything seriously. And then it's such a shock when the accident happens. She kind of immediately goes into protecting family stuff. So the Matthews are interesting vehicle into this.
And we know at this point, looking back, that Julie knows that they're getting divorced.
Exactly. She's kind of being snotty
because she has this information that her family is going to break up.
Good point.
Right? So that's why she's acting all fucked up. And her shirt says illusion.
Oh, yeah, it does.
On her shirt. It's a three-eyed bunny, right, with the third eye on top of the forehead, right, like the eye of Nimrod. And it says illusion. And it's a shirt that was made specifically for the show. You can't buy that shirt unless you do it yourself. Illusion. We all know what illusion is. It's something that looks like something but truly isn't. What we see with these creatures are. It's an illusion, right? The grandma monster doesn't look like the grandma monster in real, when they're really in their real form, right? So I think illusion is very meaningful. I think when you're dealing with the faraway trees. And I think you're dealing with a lot. I think all this stuff is an illusion. And it's made to look like it's real. But it truly is just an illusion in the end. It's going to be proven.
And I could not agree with you more over that overall thing about a pilot show. Because this is just an overall thing. Because yes, this is a pilot show. But pilot shows, in the way that Tony and I would talk about them, don't really exist anymore. Series are set for series orders now. There's still pilots in network sense. You'll get a pilot show, but for the most part, when a show on a streaming network like this, it's ordered as a season. It gets ordered off the concept. They don't film an individual episode and then come back and film the rest of the episodes. They're filmed all in a cycle. So I think even more so in shows like that, with a show like this, that was basically just greenlit for a season. So much of the conclusion of our story is probably buried within this first episode. That's why I was saying, not even joking, that the end of this series might end up, the last shot we see is Boyd ringing a bell, getting everyone to come to the escape pod of some sort. Like, it's going to echo something we saw in this first episode. And at least that's my 2 cent tinfoil thing, that somehow the last sounds we hear in the final episode of From is going to be Boyd ringing a bell. And I do think you're saying with the Matthews, listen closely to the dialogue between them. It's, and think about it as we move forward in the series. I think so much of this, we're going to go back, Tony, and go, oh yeah, you know, Tony, you were right here. I feel you right. Like, there is so much within this episode, more than the rest of the season, just because they're literally littering the finality of the series.
No doubt about it. Let's go to next scene.
And I forgot how much I love Father Cawtree. They should have kept him alive longer.
I think so, too.
Sorry. I just forgot. Like, he shows up. I'm like, oh, yeah, I love this character. He's so missing in season two. And they bring him back twice as a ghost.
Come on in, then.
Oh, is it the Donna scene?
The
colony house? Again, what I was saying, one line. You're not supposed to be here, Sheriff. No, I'm here to see my son. Okay, go. And Fatima is so nice to him in the scene, as we're going to hear in a second. She's like, oh my God, come all the time, you know? And Ellis steps up at the end of the episode. He might give him shit, but he does. He shows up at the funeral late to show his respects, and he jumps in the car at the end. I really thought Ellis was going to go this season, Tony, season two, because...
Yeah, because it was a good chance. He should have.
It's just, is it horrible for me to say I want to see, I don't want to see, but I feel like Boyd's going to lose everything at some point. So I felt like they were going to do it, but maybe it's something that will happen later. David, the best place to find this show is the MGM Plus app. You can get it and watch it through access through the through Amazon Prime as well. If you want to pay, like, I think it's $1.99 or something, whatever it is. You can also find it in some pirate waters, but we don't suggest that. And depending on what country you're in, it's different place. I think in some countries it's on Netflix. But in the US, Amazon Prime, you can order it there, or the MGM Plus app are the best ways to watch it.
We lost a couple people last night.
Did we?
And how exactly did we lose them? Lauren Pratt.
Dick.
And her little girl, Megan. Lauren was the...
Yeah, I know who Lauren is.
Now, they didn't say what Lauren was, but he was going to say Lauren was the one, like, Lauren did something for them.
Right. Lauren was the little, was the little girl you taught how to ride a bike.
It was something that that he cut. He goes, yeah, I know she's like, cut him right off. But she did something that, you know,
I bet, Tony, Abby. I bet it has something to do with Abby. Like, that's the little girl that Abby liked, you know, that was a friendship or something. There's something to do with the mutt. Like, they went out to dinner.
I don't know if Abby was around that long. Abby got killed pretty fast.
I guess you're right. I mean, but then how long did Ellis stay around Boyd after Abby died before he said peace out and went to colony?
I think he went. I think it's if they had the rule that they had the rule with these with them, he peaced right out.
And he peaced right out. He like was.
He shot his mother, and he blamed him for the shooting of his mother.
Now, Tony, before we get too into Ellis and and Boyd's relationship. Let's get into this because a couple of people in the live chat are saying this. Fatima seems too nice, makes me suspicious. Fatima, I like Fatima, but there's something about her story that is sus. She was the only one not traveling. It retrospectively, looking back in this episode and thinking of the series as a whole, is Fatima suspect to you, Tony?
I don't know if she's suspect. I don't see why she would be doing anything. Again, when you deal with this situation that as if this was an experiment, that I think it is, and I told y'all that I believe that this is an experiment, in order for someone to be the mole or something like that, you have to be there from the beginning. Fatima was not there from the beginning. So I don't think that she's the mole. I think that she's there because she can't have babies and they're trying to experiment on her to try to see if they can fix that situation for whatever reason.
Do you think some of that experimenting leads to the Fatima we see in the vision in season two?
I would go into the whole monster thing and everything else. It's Fatima, and I have a thing too here that I wish I could bring it up.
I think a lot of people are saying not suspect, just a free spirit. I think it's her nice energy. People don't television characters that are too nice. You can't help but be a little.
Boyd's Casanova Pulis says Boyd's the mole. He's not the mole. He wasn't there from the beginning. You have to pick someone who was there from the beginning to see the whole experiment through.
I think it's Victor, and he doesn't know. I think Victor
is there from the beginning. Is Victor? It's Donna, Victor. You can look in a hole and see when Boyd got there, who was there before. The other dude that was Donna's real-life husband, him, these are the people, Father Cotchery, these are the people who were there before. It has to be one of them.
I keep going back to Victor is being used without his realization. He is an unwilling mole.
Donna is easily the top suspect to me.
Donna's it's just so convenient. And Liz would play it so damn well. Like if Liz was a double agent and she just like snapped and the face changed and she became all like
suspect. I'm going to tell you something that I haven't told anyone anything about this, but since we're doing deep dive, I got to go into it. I could pull it up for you. If I wasn't sharing this, I would share it for you. And maybe at the end, if you ask me this, I'll pull it up. If you like, so when you see the Matthews, right, you have the missing posters for everybody, mm-hmm. right? Let me see if I can pull five.
Oh, it's great to see Jess in the live chat. We haven't seen Jess in a while.
Good
to
see Jess. Find these real quick. I got so many fucking pictures here. Did I put them in a from catalog? Because to be smart, am I smart enough to do that?
Kat says, all that's well and good, Tony, but I still don't trust Fatima.
Listen, yeah, you all have the right not to trust anyone. No,
we all have our characters that I died on the hill not trusting Jim the bartender. He stood up, he went in that house and helped with the falling building, and I still was like, something's up with that guy. So I'm with you.
Right. Let me see. You have the right, everyone has the right to do what they want. I just want to show you, this is something that I picked up on that maybe people didn't pick up on. All right, we can see this, right, Phil?
Yep.
All right, so these are the missing posters that were from the show and everything else. So you got missing woman, Christy Miller, last seen 8/6/2001, last seen traveling towards the Grand Mission.
Wait, no, there's some fine print. Last seen giving Kenny no action.
No ass for Kenny. Right, and it's right, and Ellis helped bring.
Did
Ellis
they just use the actors' headshots? That's
it great. Could be, and it says on the bottom that we can't see here because other night he was traveling with his family. Right, Donna, it says is still missing right here on this picture.
Oh, she's from Bozeman, Montana. I've actually been to Bozeman, Montana.
And then we have Jade,
my ex girlfriend's from
Bozeman. And then we have. I don't know why.
Sarah Myers.
Sarah Myers.
She's been missing since 2021.
But this is the thing about Sarah Myers that I want everyone to realize. Maybe I could see it better if I went back to the original screen. So yeah, that you could see. I don't know, why is that bottom thing there?
It's the stupid preview thing. There is a way of disabling it, but maybe if you click on there it is. Right.
And then this hide this too. All right. So when you see it says Sarah Myers has been missing since 9/18/2021. Last seen traveling from Hope, Pennsylvania towards Boston, Massachusetts.
Boston, you're coming to Boston.
She was heading towards there. But you know what the crazy thing? So, Phil, when you see this, there's something crazy about this picture. Do you
what's
know
in the window? What's in the window?
I didn't look at the window.
There's something looking at her in the window?
No. It does look like there's something in that window. Has anybody else seen what I'm seeing? What's suspect about this missing poster for Sarah? Can anyone else see it or picked up on it?
Sarah Myers has been missing. Is it in the Fatima's posters? Yeah, Jackie. I'm looking at the chat to try to save me here. It's a curtain balled up. Okay, it's a curtain balled up. Come on, kill your ego. I was trying. I'm trying for something sick here. Is it? No. Is the picture is in town?
No. No, it's not. No, no one got it. No one in the chat can get it.
No. Tony, let us know.
Sarah is missing, but her brother is in town. How come it doesn't say she's with her brother?
Right. How come it says the Myers?
Every other person that you see here who's with somebody, it says that they're with that person is missing. When you look at the family and whoever else is missing posters, you can go through it. Ellis's poster says he was traveling with his family. Boyd's poster says that he's traveling with his family. All the Matthews posters said they were traveling with their family. Sarah's brother is in the town, but it doesn't say anything about her being with her brother. Or did her brother come after her and come and missing later?
I mean, we have
traveling at the same time with her. Then he should be in the poster with her like everybody else.
Yep. Unless it's a situation, which I guess there is precedent later, but we find out that nothing like this has ever happened before, where Christie's girlfriend shows up where she's sort of someone she knows.
Yeah, she's not. Yeah.
But and they make it a point to say that nothing like that's ever happened before. So Sarah and her brother did show up together. So that is an interesting touch that her brother is not mentioned in that photo. I still want to know what that curtain is in the background. And Tony, I don't know for a fact, but I think if you use your arrow key on that, it will switch pictures without giving you that little thing on the bottom, like the arrow key on your keyboard, like the right and left thing. I think it might work. Maybe it won't. I don't know. I could be wrong. Yeah. Oh, there we go. Yes. I was right about something. Let's say Jim and Matt Tavis. Yeah, it is kind of like their headshots. It's interesting. They got Jim with his slicked back hair.
Your hair is slicked back. But every time you see it, and anyone who is with anyone, they always say that they were traveling together. But for some reason, Sarah, it doesn't say anything about her brother. And Jackie said, you could say no one missed her brother. All right. that is definitely doing. We can definitely say it. But it's the fact that they didn't and everything else. They didn't do that and all that. So that is what is weird about that whole situation with Sarah. And we'll get back to that and everything else. It should have had mention of her brother, but it does not have any mention of her brother.
And Jim is okay. So yeah, we definitely get the hint, as I was mentioning before, that the Matthews are breaking up as they come to the point of the road where there's trees blocking, where they remark that there's storm selective. We meet Don and Boyd as we go back to Ellis and Fatima as he's drawing her. And we're talking about the Ellis and Boyd scene. And he basically says,
it was like, go back to Fatima, bro. The picture of Fatima. All right. I'll go back to five. I just did all the stuff and everything.
But speaking of Fatima, that's the scene where Fatima leaves. She walks out so Boyd and him can talk. Tony mentioned the whole thing about the girl dying and having some relationship with Ellis that doesn't get mentioned, but enough of gets implied. And Boyd basically just says, stop being a little bitch and show up for the funeral. Goodbye. And he walks off. I mean, he's nicer about it, but whatever. And then we get more of the Matthews stuff, but we already talked about that. And then we eventually get to our funeral. And
all right, Joe says, if missing, have you seen Fatima? 2/8/28, last seen 2/28/21. A lot of people are gone in the year 2021. How many people have gone in the year 2021? That's one, that's two, Sarah. Yeah. It doesn't say his date. No,
and we know he shows up the whatever year, the year yeah, that
18, it's in. Nope, 19.
19.
21, Christy, that's three. Ooh.
Who knows when that loser showed up?
So we have three people in the year 2021. They're 22, Ethan and them. Steve's 19, and that's one of my photos. My thumbnail. And that's the last one that they made.
So Jade is 22 as well because he showed up the same day that the Matthew showed up. So
three people showed up there in 2021. Three. That's a lot compared to the other years.
And Casanova Pugilist, yes, season three is a definite go. They are working on it right now. Yes. And hopefully
we will have an on-set interview like we did last year. That's already guaranteed. So,
nice. That's going to be fun. And yep. And I'm going to guess late summer, early fall.
Yeah, we'll get more into it when we speak to our on-set interviewee later on. As we did last year.
So Boyd breaks the funeral. He's like, okay, yep, da-da-da. Everyone ignores the Matthew shit talk. Jim asks for the highway and Boyd is okay. So yeah, they're at the funeral. So we'll get to, I think the next scene that we'll probably be listening
to. Yeah, let's listen and see what we got.
He came to the service.
Oh yeah, this is just more.
And in that piece, we can be sure Lorna and Megan now reside.
Jim, Dad, that's a funeral.
Dad.
And Jim doesn't care. So the Matthews basically pull up in the middle of all of this. And they're like, what is it, a cult or something? And Jim's like, forget this. I'm going to go outside and talk.
Leave these people be. And Ian, I'll handle.
Oh, man. Take over.
So, Tony, there's an important line there that Boyd says to everybody. He says, remember how you felt your first day. Me and Kenny will handle this. So their protocol is to have just two people talk to them. And let's set up what the protocol is before they actually do it. So the protocol is to tell everyone, tell the people that show up, everything's fine.
And I would drive in
circles until they go crazy and then flatten their tires.
I think that many people may have, you know, over the years of time that they've been there, use different approaches. And I think that they're trying to say, listen, Kenny's got the little deputy suit. So he looks like he has some type of authority. So he looks trustworthy. Right, and that's why they have him there. Boyd has an oversized jacket on, but he does have a badge on. And Boyd is very like snappy with them and everything.
He's short. He's annoyed by all of this. Is what I keep saying. Now, Tony, my overall question though for you is: Boyd and Kenny's general plan, telling the people everything's fine, go on your way, driving in circles till you eventually flatten their tires. Do you think this is the best plan to alert people what's going on?
No, but they flattened everyone. Look at all the tires.
No, exactly. Yeah. This seems to be the plan. I don't know if this is the best plan. This seems like a pretty psychotic plan.
Now, Jesse says, let's put the picture up here. She says, oh, snap, the New Hope, Pennsylvania town is the same scene from the hospital window. And what? Who? New Hope, Pennsylvania is the same scene. Where is it? Who was coming from New Hope, Pennsylvania?
Was it? I forget. I have no short-term memory, but it was one of the people in the pictures that we were looking at.
Now I gotta go back.
Sarah. No, the chat will tell us. Sarah.
So Sarah is from New Hope, Pennsylvania. And that's the same scene.
Or she was coming from there to go to Boston, because later in this episode, when Kenny is talking to somebody, he goes, oh, they're from New York. Isn't Sarah and the brother from New York? And they say, no, they're from Boston. So maybe she was traveling from Pennsylvania back to Boston. Because at one point in this episode, they do say that they're from Boston.
All right. So they're from Boston, but they were in New Hope, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I believe that gets said in this episode.
All right, let's keep on listening. And there's something we're missing.
It's towards the point where Kenny is. They're helping people out of the car, I believe, after the accident.
Seem like a cheery group.
What's
going on?
Can I help you? Yeah. Sorry to interrupt your service.
No.
But we got on a detour off the highway. Cell service around here.
Got your family with you?
So creepy the way he says that.
It is.
Yeah.
So you got your family? So Tony. Yeah. Tony, you got your family over there?
Terrible. Hey, we off there. You got the family with you?
Hey, Joe.
You got your wife with you?
Hey, Tony. I'm coming to visit you. Your daughter's going to be there? What's going on?
You got a thong on that ass right now?
Yeah, what's going on?
like it was very creepy the way he said it.
Who's gonna be there? What's
going on? This is the guy who's telling you, let us handle it, right? Like, he's this expert. And when he puts it out there, this motherfucker is the biggest creeper of them all.
Dude, he's been in Oz.
Hey, you got the family with you. You got the family there. Hey.
You got some snacks in there? What kind of snacks you bring on this trip? What's going on? What you got in that camper? Creeper.
He's the biggest one of them all.
That's why he was in Oz, Tony. You know?
There's no doubt about it.
Creepy.
All right, let's keep listening to the boy.
Wondering if you could point me in the direction of the highway.
Again, I'm not sure if this is the best plan. Drive till you go insane and then flatten your tires. I guess the thought pattern is you need to see this for yourself. No matter how much
you can't just stop you. You gotta realize it.
Right. You have to see the loop before you can figure it out. So I guess I'll take it back. It's not the dumbest idea.
Well, this we gotta listen to this here. This part right here is important. Back it up just a little bit.
There you are. Head back down to the barn. Just driving around, huh?
It's the worst part.
Sarah and her brother.
Mm-hmm.
You okay?
Nope.
Fine. You're a good brother. Now get those animals that can feed themselves.
Did all right? I'll be back in a bit.
Again, we established that Sarah has a brother. We just looked at the picture. He's not mentioned in the picture at all that he's there. But supposedly, this is Sarah's brother. And it'd be cool if the animals fed themselves.
And I also think it's interesting that Sarah has probably already been spoken to and told that she has to kill somebody today and that it'll be presented to her. She knows that she seems like she's been touched already right now. And she knows that cars are coming and one of the people that are coming, she has to kill and it will present itself to her. It seems all in her performance and all in her walking, Tony, that she already has the "I will kill, I must kill the queen."
Well, she has something on his mind. That's why he says, "Is something going on with you?" He can notice it, that there's something on her mind.
Right, and it's murder. Murder's on her mind.
Yes, do something.
Murder most foul.
All right, let's keep going here.
Murder. Oh, no music. I'm going to talk over it just in case. Even though we'll be, this is YouTube now, we're going to be demonetized for saying heck. This scene's funny because Tabitha's getting pissed at Jim the whole time, thinking he's missing turns. Which eventually leads into the two cars driving head-to-head as Jade and his tripping buddy, him and his buddy, are rolling or tripping or amongst other things.
Well, you gotta look, they always say that one person, we always see the tree, but Jade never seen the tree because he was in the back seat.
He never sees the tree. Unless he got out of the car for a second and said, "Oh, that's a pretty tree. Look at that. It's a pretty tree." Oh.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of Jade in the clips. I should have put more in there. But again, I was rushing just to get this audio here because I was.
I can simulate every Jade line in the episode. Chat, you look very pretty tonight. You're very pretty. Jade is basically every line in this episode is just him tripping balls. That's basically what Jade. We don't have to say. Play Jade lines because it's him tripping balls, telling everyone they're beautiful. Is basically.
Yeah, this is when we get, you know, that they realize that they're just driving around in circles and they're not in there. And Tabitha with the switchback. Where's the switchback, Tab? Where was it?
Where's the turn? Dude, that reminds me of every road trip I've ever been on in my life, Tony.
The switchback. No one ever says switchback. No one ever says switchback at all. And everything else, you know what I mean? And so they crash right now. That's where we're at. And then we get this real quick.
Run, Forrest, run.
And we get Toby. Introduce to Toby real quick. That he was the car driver. He says there's an accident. He almost steps on the spikes. They have to watch his feet from stepping on the spike. They're just sitting there waiting for him to come back. And they know that they're going to come right back down that same road.
Right. The spikes are staying there for the joke at the end of the episode when they drive the car. And they're like, "You didn't move the damn spikes." And also we see inside the trailer during this segment leading up to here where we see that the Matthews, Tabitha's knocked out. Julie seems pretty okay. And Ethan has one of the like a table chair.
Go through the audio, man. Here.
And Jim stuck behind a tree.
Dad, I think he's bleeding.
Where?
There's something in his leg.
Where? I just like that answer to that question. He's bleeding. Where? Don't ask me that ever.
Where is he bleeding from?
Where?
But yeah, Tabitha's knocked out. Julie's fine.
Yeah, Julie and Jim seem fine. And Ethan has a chair. I think they say it's a seat or a chair.
Yeah, it's a chair. It's a piece of a chair. It goes directly right through his thigh.
But conveniently doesn't damage any arteries, as Chrissy says later.
Yeah.
It went clean. It was clean right through.
It was clean. And this is what leads to them coming up with the idea that they get Chrissy and then she's like, "I can't remove this."
Right. Basically, they came back. We also get a scene where everyone is Father Cawtry, Kenny are driving to go do them. And Ellis is at the graveyard. Ellis jumps in to go help them too. They roll down to the scene. Chrissy helps Jade for a second, but he's all stoned and stuff. I forgot to also mention that Boyd handcuffed Jade handcuffed him to the car just to kind of keep him safe. And then Chrissy comes down, assesses the situation. They get Jim and Julie out, and they get Tabitha out, who can't really think straight. She's sort of amnesia. She refers to Ethan as their dead child. And then, as you said, it gets to a point where Chrissy is like, it's going to take an hour to get him out of there. You know, he's going to survive. You know,
well, they only have 2 hours of sunlight left. They have this down pat that as soon as the sunlight is gone, these creatures are out.
Right. And at this point,
they have any time at all.
And at this point, already an hour has passed, because at the point of all of this, actually an hour and 20 minutes, because when Chrissy finally gets there and assesses the situation, she says at a minimum, it's going to take an hour to get that thing out. And Kenny's like, we got 40 minutes of sunlight left. So Boyd gets an immediate idea to use the talisman that he has in his hand that you mentioned earlier that he had, and turn the trailer into the thing.
And they've never done it. The only thing they know, they've never tried it outside of the house. They think it only works in the house at this particular time.
And
the talisman.
And Tabitha also really wants to stay. She's screaming to stay, and they basically have to just say, no. Yeah, you can't stay.
Do the videotape.
Nice.
As Warner Wolf would say.
Go to the tape.
How are you feeling?
Oh, Sarah. With at least she kisses him first, you know? If someone's gonna kill me, please kiss me first. And this.
No, easy. Okay.
And we missed it in that sense, because it just happened. But the murder, Sarah's murder, was friggin' like gruesome too. She
doesn't do it in that scene.
Oh, okay, it's the next scene.
Yeah.
Hey, we need to go to the
hey, don't tell them to go
away. Right, yeah. I don't think so.
Now, when you hear him talking right here, Toby, he's blaming himself. He's like, oh, God, I shouldn't have been. Most likely he's saying he shouldn't have been on drugs.
Yeah, he shouldn't have been driving.
Blaming himself for being on drugs right at this particular time.
Oh no. Oh, you can even hear it. Oh, good use of sound design with the splat.
But you have to ask yourself, right? So you have Sarah, and we know now that she's being communicated with people. Why did those people that she's communicating told her that Toby has to die? Out of all the people, you have to kill Toby. Why is that?
Can I riddle me this, Tony? If not riddle me, I don't know, I just wanted to say it like that, like an asshole. But I'm gonna take one of your many theories and run with it. If this is all something to do with Jade in the future doing some stuff, then getting rid of Jade's number one guy could definitely have something to do with it. If this is Jade doing all this to himself, and say this guy was a partner in that, he just made himself $100 billion by getting rid of this dude. Who knows? I'm not saying that that's the case, but I'm just throwing one possibility. If we go down the theory that Jade has something to do with this in the future of some simulation game that he created, his company that went public, that somehow he would have wanted him dead, or somehow thinking that Jade is dangerous by hamstringing him by killing somebody that he cares about, takes him off the table because whoever's in control here thinks someone like Jade could cause some problems. So you want to make him as unbalanced as you possibly can.
Well, you got to understand when it comes down to it, is that the creatures that are communicating with Sarah, not the people that are controlling this game, the people who are also captured, told Sarah he has to die. When he dies, the only thing that happens that we see from his death is that Jade begins to take this seriously. Before he wasn't dead, Jade thought it was a joke and everything else. But as soon as that happened, Jade took it seriously and he started to look for a way of trying to solve to get out of this situation. So they most likely knew that we need Jade to take this seriously, so we must
walk. Okay, so you're saying the same thing, but in a different way, that it was motivated to kill him to motivate Jade to help solve a solution to get them out of here. To go into the other side, if they were trying to negatively impact him too, the voices might not be 100% clear, and maybe Jade was supposed to be the one that died, and instead they got Jade's friend, one of those people in that car that arrives today you need to kill. And it happened to be him, not Jade, but the voices wanted Jade to die. So there's a lot of possibilities here. But the interesting thing to note is what we were talking about before, that Sarah was talked to a while ago. Whatever knew that Sarah needed to kill something, knew that people were arriving beforehand. And knew who was going to arrive, essentially, too, maybe.
Because they orchestrated the second car.
We have all sorts of stories, mythologies, legends that could be interpreted as gods who in reality were misinterpreted extraterrestrials.
That's what it is. This is what happens. They set it up. They brought in the second car. They
were on the grassy knoll. They were in the freaking grassy knoll.
They were there. They did it. They were the ones who did it.
Direwolves did it. No, but yeah. So that this is a whole interesting thing dealing around Sarah and why she went to action and when she went to action, and it is interesting moving forward because
the first person they show after Boyd is Sarah.
Yep. We were saying that too. She inherently knows more about this place than anybody but Victor.
Well, that'd be next episode, but we'll talk a little bit about it. She specifically says that these people have never been able to communicate with anyone but her for the whole time they've been there. So what does that mean? How long has they been there? Has it been 100 years, 200 years? Have they been there as long as Martin or longer than Martin? But out of all the time they've been there, Sarah's the only one that they've actually been able to physically communicate with. The other communications that they do is in the jukebox and everything else. And people just ain't picking up on it and everything. You know what I mean? And what the songs mean. So that's the only thing that they have there is Sarah. So Sarah's a thing. And they're telling Sarah, you know, this dude has to die. You have to kill him in order to go home. So why would he have to die? If you look at it and you see the whole thing, the only thing that Toby factors in is that when Jade realizes that Toby is dead, he stops thinking it's a game and he starts trying to figure out a way to get out.
Yeah, and if his party buddy is there, he's more likely to work and not just hang out in the bar and party with that dude. So in general, he's a lot more motivated when it comes down to it.
No doubt about it. All right, let's go into another clip.
Oh, yeah, and Kenny's dad didn't like any of this. When Kenny's dad had to be brought downstairs and was there when all of this murder was going on.
No, this is suicide.
Separate the table light from the table, and it's going to be dark out, so we need lanterns or lights or anything.
Okay, so this is at the point where everyone's already gone and they're back in the trailer getting ready to do the action. So
Boy just talked to his son. As you can see, that his son does care for him in that scene.
And they're like all
suicide by you staying in there.
Because they don't know that that's going to work.
Yeah, and they have no idea.
Boyd starts hanging up blankets on the windows and stuff and setting up the talisman. Mm-hmm. And Jim starts asking him questions and we get a little bit of a... And Jim, this is where Jim starts getting very sure, dude. You know, you can't go outside at night. There's dangerous things at night. Yeah, whatever. Dangerous things at night. Sure.
How are we doing?
Good.
Almost ready to
go. Hey, Jim, I'm going to need you around here just to support that.
I love how Christy is like the greatest doctor in television history since Bones McCoy. She can just do doctoring in any situation, any operation. She just has like the amazing skills.
What are you doing?
All right, here it is.
I am... doing my best to keep the RV safe.
Jim's like, safe? This is Jim's face. Safe?
Shit. You left the fucking splice suit down.
Oh yeah, I mentioned this earlier. This is the funniest moment in the episode. They forget to take the spike strip, and they all have to run the colony house.
You run as best you can, no matter what you see, no matter what you hear. You do not stop. You understand me? No matter what.
What he specifically says: no matter what you see, no matter what you hear, meaning that he thinks that these monsters are going to try to say, "Hey,
yeah, we're back." And we see that with the bus people later on, where in that big in the only monster scene in season two, essentially, where they go like Freddy at the party and kill everybody. I also want to point out an interesting line in that scene, Tony, who said it? If they'll let us into Colony House. So at this point, there's this mindset of Donna won't even let people from town in the door. So to our point of my answer to what I'd always do, I live in town and then hang out and smoke weed at Colony House. I guess I can't do that. I guess I have to pick one or the other.
Well, when the sun goes down, if you're in, you're in. If you're out, you're out.
No, but they were I guess that was more the point. Like,
they're not letting anyone in when the sun goes down because they don't know if you're really these creatures or not.
Good point. I read that incorrectly, and I read it more that people from town aren't welcome in Colony House. But you're right. It's too late at night. They may not let us in.
Yeah, this is the last scene we got, so we'll listen to this. Okay.
Yeah, the Jim again. Safe?
Jim, the things you need to understand about what happens next.
Understand? Jim?
Now he said, listen. So he says to him, safe from what? And then he goes, Dad, my head hurts. Right, we see that the thing is through his leg, so the pain shouldn't be coming from his head. But then this happens.
He starts shaking.
Yeah. And then we hear the monster scream again. You could look at Boyd's face that he's shocked to hear this screaming because they stopped screaming, these monsters. This is the first time they've screamed in a very long time. They used to do that in the beginning every night. but they stopped screaming. But they started screaming again right after this kid had his seizures.
Or as celebration because they finally killed one the other night and that they smelled blood in the water as like as more of a troll to them. But it is interesting the way the synchronicity of the scene, the way it happened with him freaking out, waking up right as their boy's about to answer the question, to shaking, to the scream that symbolized like the beginning of the evening. It's pretty disturbing. John Henderson.
That is it. Boyd says they're coming. And that is how the first season ends, when you see the monsters approaching the RV.
Right. I forgot. This
episode.
I forgot we don't see them in the first episode. It's going to be interesting getting into this episode too. John Henderson. Yeah, Kenny's pants ain't coming past his ankles one season. But yeah, this is a great first episode. You mentioned something at the beginning, what a pilot needs to have for you, a cliffhanger that gets you excited for the next episode, and this one really does that. And I think it clicks all those boxes for me too. I think in general this show, in my memory anyways, because I haven't rewatched it since last year, it starts off really strong. These first few episodes really get the ball rolling. And
it does. I mean, Bill D, I don't understand your comments, says why is Sarah desperate to get out of Frumville by killing just to get back to stepfather and bad boyfriend relationship? Did she not say she was weak? I don't think she's just getting back by killing. I think she's told that this is what she has to do to get everybody back. It's not about her. And she says that from the beginning, that this is what, in order for everyone to go home, not just her. And her life. So she's not doing these things just for jealous situation, for greedy situation. She's trying to save everybody.
Yeah, and I think in some ways being not mind controlled, but manipulated on a big, huge level.
You know that, and everything. So, you know, I think no one wants to be there. Who would want to be locked up there again? Maybe if you would, you know, Donna wants to be there. She likes it.
Victor, I don't think wants to go anywhere because he doesn't have anywhere to go because he's institutionalized into that place. I mean, I think it does get to a point like that where if the monsters weren't there, it wouldn't be a bad place to live. You get all the free food popping up and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you didn't have to worry about getting mauled by alien monster fairy, whatever you want to call those thing creatures, every night after dark. Wouldn't be a bad place to live. I don't know.
No doubt about it. But yeah, so this is the deep dive from season one, episode one. We'll be here every week. That's 20 straight weeks, right? We're gonna go every week, do every episode.
I mean, realistically, we will definitely try to go every week. But I know both Tony and I will be away in the same week in January, so we
might. Yeah, I mean, obviously, something like these what will happen. But in the end, it will be 20 straight weeks. We will talk about this and do this way. And I don't know, I may have to remove the phone line since no one wants to call in. It makes no sense to do it.
I mean, something like this, it's probably better if we just talk about it and then open the lines at the end, or have a separate show for the call-in show for this when we're in the season, when there's, you know, questions. If people have specific questions, they can leave voicemails all the time and then we'll can listen to it at the end of the show. And if people request us opening the phone lines, we will. But for the most part, we'll keep our diving deep for us and get you guys in when you want to.
Yeah, no, just since people aren't interested. So I'm not going to do it if people aren't interested. Only do what y'all want us to do, and that's it, and everything else. All right, we're going to wrap this up right now and thank everybody for coming here and watching the first episode. And we're back with episode two. Again, put your comments in the comment section. Next week, we'll be back with episode two and everything else and going through all episodes. Episode two is better than episode one, and which, you know, they did a good job with it. And episode one is really good and everything else, you know. So, you know, we'll see when it goes down. Again, get ready to rewatch episode two. About to deep dive into that next week.
Nice.
And if you like the way to do this, please thumbs up this, spread this across the realm, and of course, subscribe. And until next time.